This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 682, brought to you by Molekule. For $75 off your first order, visit molekule.com and at checkout enter iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 682. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm still here. Two in a row, Josh.
I don't think you're going anywhere there, Sparky.
My co-host, Josh Flanagan. I thought I could do like one off, three off, you know, like, you know. But I guess I can't do that. That's not allowed. It's not
my contract. Like executives in the corporate world.
Sure. Like Fridays off.
Yeah.
You know, like doctors. We are a fanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks our favorite book, call it Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron picks, and listener mail if we have time. Mostly, we try to have fun, and by extension, hope you have fun. Because we're all having fun. That's take the fun where you can get it these days.
But also, we want to move units.
Right.
That's not what we're about.
I just assume somewhere there's a bank account accruing cuts from all these books we're talking about. That's what I assumed.
We're moving units.
Like a penny a book?
Yeah. We'd be doing all right with that by now.
But that, I guess it's not happening. This week... Oh, did we do the spoiler warning? Spoiler warning! This is a review show. There'll be some spoilers this week. Josh, you had the pick of the week this week.
I did, and as usual, I always like to give my context. I don't know why I like to do that, because I feel I need to justify
myself.
Context
is sometimes important and informative.
It is, and I think that actually it's you know what, it's something that our culture may be lacking a little bit. We could say here, this sucks. I could say this is good, but here's what went along with it. Judge for yourself. I'm reading my stack of books. Not a super busy week, which I was just fine with, but I was pretty deep in there, and I was like, I don't know what a pick of the week is, and I got to this book, Excellence. The only reason I knew about it at all was because it was the number one from Image, so I check out number ones from Images. Mm-hmm. Image, and I saw it had some votes for the patron pick. Mm-hmm. Spoiler, it is not the patron pick. But I was like, well, I'll just look at it and see what it is. And it's written by Brandon Thomas. I know the name, and I can see a headshot in my face. That's about as far as it goes.
He's in Lion Forge books and some other stuff. Kerry Randolph has done a lot of work. I know him from We Are Robin and some other...
He did that that Stan Lee thing with Paul Cornell years ago. I forget the name of it. I really like his style.
We're going to get to that. He's terrific.
So I said, oh, I'll give this one a shot. And then basically it's either an alternate reality or it's a reality that exists alongside ours. It's like a secret society magic kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's primarily a group of black African-American characters who – it's sort of like Harry Potter. They're like a secret society of magicians that I guess live in New York City alongside us. At first, I thought it was like this other world, you know. But
that's what's interesting. So before we get into that part, I just want to say I wasn't surprised because it's mm-hmm. really good.
Yeah.
But I was surprised because it's all the things you just said, and that's usually not what you're into.
Exactly.
So I was a little surprised. I was like, oh.
So, but that's the thing. So first instinct, right when I started it, I was like, oh, it's another one of these books where it's a different world that we've built up. They have their own rituals, languages, customs, clothing, whatever. They've built another world. And I thought, all right, we'll see what's going. But the thing that got me here was at the beginning, there was still a little bit of basically there's a man, and he's a big dude in the whole magic world they're in. And yeah, he has a baby. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things that he talks about is how he says, like, I always like one kind of story. Every story I've ever loved that meant anything to this is a quote. Every story I've ever loved that ever meant anything to me was really about one thing. And he's saying it could take place in a different time, happen in any place. People who didn't look anything like me or ever appreciate my own circumstances. As long deep down the surface, the story is really all about fathers and their sons. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's interesting. That means that's what this is actually about.
Right.
Not about all this magic stuff. And you know, that's always the case. But here they laid it out very clearly. So I was looking for it from the beginning.
I mean, it's page like 1 and 2. Or
yeah.
2 and 3. Yeah. I mean, it's like right at the front.
And I really relate to that. Not even just as a father, but as a kind of story. Like, I always gravitate towards that kind of story. That story and like stories of like really brotherly friendships kind of thing mm-hmm. is another thing. Like, I always sort of gravitate to, because those are the two things that I always wanted. And so there's that, and I'm like, well, that's interesting. And then the second bit is that sort of the baby is born, this boy, and he's not what the father expected.
Well, he's supposed to be the heir to the most powerful magic right. family. And it says in the beginning that the kids usually manifest magic power, I think it was like the average age is 5.
Yeah.
And here we see him training through the years in a very fun like montage. And he's up to 9 with no magic showing up. So the father has moved his attention to another one of his students who's not his son, who is clearly an adept magic user, and that affects the son quite a bit.
Right, but at the same time, like the father starts out at the beginning, he's like, I can't wait for this, I'm going to give him my world, I'm going to do everything, and then as things are not what he expects, he needs to adjust, and he doesn't always make the right choices about how to do that. There's a lot of feelings that go along with it. I'm a special needs kid. That's sort of what I'm getting at. He's a great kid. He's super intelligent, but things are a little harder with him than other stuff. And the way that this played out was very honest, I thought, even though it's couched in all this magic stuff.
Well, that's the best kind of sci-fi or fantasy story is reality-based, emotion and feelings and relationships. And it's magicians, but it's also it's a son who's disappointed his father until he does manifest his magic, and then things get complicated.
And that's where it gets away from my experience. But there are some of the things in the other stuff that really I was like, oh, this is an interesting take. I haven't read this, or at least not lately, and certainly not in this form. Then the other side of it, you've got what I thought was you talked about the sequence of the aging, mm-hmm. the way that was drawn and written in comic book form. I thought it was really well done. There was a sort of parallelism to the panels as we went through them as he ages. And Cary Randolph's style is great. It's really wonderful. His characters all have their own faces and posture, and so I know who I'm looking at for the most part.
That is Michael B. Jordan.
That's Michael B. Jordan. Yeah, he's got that jaw thing.
I mean, they are clearly – this is Skybound, so they'll be – I'm sure Michael B. Jordan's people already have this book in their hands.
I would imagine so, yeah.
And it would be a great vehicle for him.
Yep.
I mean, it's not every panel, but – there's some panels where it's just like, oh, when he's getting his hair cut by his grandmother, it's like
he's got that lower jaw thing where he, I don't even know what the line is, but he's got like a line around the lower part of his face.
And he has the nose. It's just like, it's him. It's Michael B. Jordan, which I'm not necessarily complaining, because it's not like Mike Deodato when he like, it's a cartooning version of him where he's recognizably Michael B. Jordan, but he's also still a cartoon.
Yeah, absolutely. So then at the same time, you have, what is essentially, I'm going to say, urban black culture and vernacular mm-hmm. in this Harry Potter wizard robe kind of thing going on at the same time. And if I'm not mistaken, most of the creative or all the creative team are black, or at least not white people.
Yeah.
And I've said this before and it sounds silly, but like there is an air of like authenticity to it. Like, oh, this is right. Like there are certain comic creators who are trying to write something and it doesn't sound right. And this... it has its own vibe. It has its own voice to it, and it isn't like everything else. So I thought that was an interesting choice.
The only thing I'm not sure about is the reveal of – it's not even the reveal of what this is, because I'm not entirely sure what this is yet. But And this is also, we should say, a longer issue. I think it's 40 pages. So it's like double-sized first issue.
Which helped.
It did help. The first half, or even more than the first half, maybe the first half, was just with the magicians. So like you said, is this like a different world? Is it a different universe? Is it is it just a different reality? But then it's revealed it's our reality. And it seems like maybe the magicians are invisible. And they're kind of like guardian angels. Because his whole thing is... His trial to become a full-fledged magician is his charge or whatever. Yeah, his sacred charge is this guy who's on a date and he's going to propose to his girlfriend. And if he does, his life will be great. If he doesn't, it'll be ruined. And so his job is to make sure the proposal happens. And that sounds really kind of unexciting, but it ends up being more exciting than that.
Well, but that was intriguing because I was like, what the hell's that? Like, I don't know what it means.
Right, that's what I mean. The only thing is I'm not really sure exactly what we're dealing with here, but it doesn't really matter so far because it was it's just at the very end of the story.
Well, I like that about it because it was unexpected. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I'm still – basically it left me things to be curious about and to wonder about going forward. And the character stuff at the beginning made me give a shit about doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some pretty obvious rifts that develop in here that have to do with the boy's relationship with his grandmother and what happens to her and how you're supposed to use magic and all the resentment that lives between them, you know, and the end, like, it spoke to me for a while and then it got me interested and it doesn't look or sound like anything else that I'm reading right now. It does smack of, you know, like this is obviously got other adaptations and treatments in mind. Yep. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but it is pretty front and center. If you
it's
know
the reality of internet of comics.
Yes, absolutely.
Of at least indie comics.
Mm-hmm. But I liked it and I was surprised by it. And that was the thing. There was only one other book that almost had a shot at it, which we'll talk about later.
I think we should talk with Cary Randolph a little bit more before we wrap up the discussion. Yeah. I mean, he's really... he's got a cartoony style, but it's also realistic. It sort of rides a line.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly dynamic and fluid. And
his storytelling is strong.
When the action scenes kick off, it's just like, whoa, everything gets really dynamic. And he does really great, but he also does really great emotion. There's a lot of great emotion in the characters' faces. Yep. The main guy, I'm just going to call him Michael B. Jordan, he's full of rage. That's his whole thing because his father,
call him Wallace.
His father didn't abandon him, but changed his...
Emotionally.
He changed his fatherly focus to the pupil who was a better magician. So he's full of rage. That's his whole thing. And there's a great panel where, you know, as a young kid, when he first manifests magic and blows out the wall of the training room, it's, you know, it says rage because he's full of it. And so for the rest of the scenes, you see this in his eyes. You can see it in his eyes. Even in his regular interactions, he just has a lot of rage under the surface.
So Cary Randolph went out, he got a copy of Black Panther, and he's like, well, let me look at this guy's angry face. All right, good.
And, and it's just, I just loved looking at the story was great. I love the story. I'm really into it. This is one of the better Image number ones that's come out in a while.
Yes.
I really loved looking at it. And Cary Randolph's been around for a long time. I looked up his comic book DB page just because I wanted to see what he had done beyond what I'd known. And he's done a lot of work, but it's mostly been here and there, an issue here.
Yeah.
A miniseries you haven't heard of. Like, he should really... get bumped up the artist ladder. There's a lot of artists working, especially the big two. And I'm not saying everyone has to work at the big two, but there's a lot of artists working who are not nearly as talented as he is.
Yep.
And he should be getting a lot more work.
I also think that there's a perception that cartoony artists like this aren't as attractive to people unless they break and become popular. And then you can have Humberto Ramos, but everybody else really has to work to that point.
Oh, for sure. And he's definitely not in the house style that a lot of books like to have. I thought Excellence was great, and this was a week where you and I, it happens sometimes, but more often, this was a heavy week in which you and I texted each other, make sure you read this book, make sure this book is read. Because I had Excellence, but I hadn't read it yet when you had texted me. Mm-hmm. And in the next book we're talking about Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 6, I know you don't necessarily read, so I texted you to read that one.
Yeah.
What did you think of that book?
I had made up my mind about Excellence and then remember that you told me to read that. And I thought about Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 6. I did cry. And I'm not telling you, like, I'm not saying I got a little misty at the end.
Yeah.
I cried.
Right.
Yeah, just for like 10, 15 seconds. But like, it really worked.
I knew it. That's why I made. Well, first of all, I think this book is good. And I think we talked about Tom Taylor last week. And I mentioned he also writes this book, but it's on the fringes because it's not the main Spider-Man book. It's not involved in this Kraven story. It's on its own. And this book's been really fun up until now. And this is the first issue since since issue 5, in which it was revealed that Aunt May has cancer. Mm-hmm. And so the cover is Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man introducing Spider-Bite and Spider-Man swinging with a little miniature Spider-Man behind him. So you're like, what the hell is going on here?
So we get started in here and you see what looks like a regular old Spider-Man adventure, but instead a little kid comes along and is helping him out. And Dr. Octopus is like, what are you, 8? And he's like, I'm 9 and a half. And he, you know, kicks his butt and there's a big fight. And then they go somewhere else and the Vulture shows up. And then they have to fight all of the Sinister 60 in Grand Central Station. It's a big fight. And there's a really wonderful 2-page spread of the montage of the fight, which is all broken into tinier and tinier grids.
Juan Cabal is the artist, who's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's gorgeous. There's a lot of Frank Quitely in his art.
Yep.
Little bits of it here and there. Stiltman ends up being the big bad guy. And you're like, at first you're like, what the hell is this? And then you just kind of go with it. And you're like, whatever. It's a little kid. We'll see what it is. It's fun. Then the reveal is that they pull back after the big ending. And he takes his mask off and you see like you're in a children's hospital and the kid, you can tell that he's sort of sickly pale and has no hair sticking out around his face. And Spider-Man has gone there to play act along with him because the kid loves Spider-Man, like a Make-A-Wish Foundation kind
of
thing.
Like when they did Bat-Kid a couple years ago where they turned the whole town to Bat.
Yeah.
And so here you've got the whole ward's been turned into, there's, you know, fake buildings made out of cardboard and all. Yep. The other doctors and parents and patients are wearing, you know, homemade costume, villain costumes. They were all playing the villains. And so
the nurse is Electro. So hers is the best costume. It's both a 1 and a 10.
But immediately you're just like, oh, because this is a, I don't want to say a grand Spider-Man tradition, but in Amazing Spider-Man 248, back in the 80s, they did the kid who collects Spider-Man. That was a really famous story about a kid who was dying, who Spider-Man revealed his identity to. And this was sort of a callback to that.
Then there's this bit that I think is, they said, all right, we're done with that. That was a lot of fun. Thanks for coming. Mm-hmm. Come on, buddy. You need to go to bed. And the kid screams, I don't want to go to bed. And there's a silent panel right after that. And then the kid immediately says, I'm sorry, which they do, but never that fast. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was super honest. I was like, I don't know if Tom Taylor has kids, but he's been around them, where a kid can flip, especially a kid who's sick or whatever, can flip immediately, you know, to just like, they're frustrated, so they just lash out. And it seems like they're bad kids or not well-behaved kids, but to me, again, that was very real and honest, and I thought that was nice. And so then you have one more bit, and it wasn't the bit where they reveal that he's a sick kid that made me have a feeling. It was Spider-Man's like, well, what's the deal? And he's like, well, he's worried he won't get up again. Silent panel, sad. And he's like, get his jacket, or basically whatever. And in the last page is, you know, your day's not over. And he's swinging around the city holding the kid. And it's just like, he was already doing a nice thing. And he went the extra mile because he was trying to. And I just thought it was sweet. It was a really...
Yeah, that end was emotionally devastating when the parents explained that he's angry. He does not want to go to sleep. He's afraid he will never wake up again. And so that silent panel where Peter's looking at him through the glass, but Peter's sort of frosted. Mm-hmm. It was a really terrific panel.
But also, like, I just like the idea that they've extended what a hero is.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, okay, I did that thing. And he didn't go, I'm sorry, you know, and then have to go think about it. He's like, I'm going to do something else then. Because that's what he is. He's the hero who does the thing. He's got the power, the responsibility. Yeah. It all, you know, feeds back into what it should be. And I think, you know, we don't get a lot of that. We get so much anguish and torture, and even though this is like a sad story, it's a happy story,
and it doesn't really fit into quote-unquote modern comics. You know, you don't get to tell this sort of one-off tale, even though it's tied into emotionally what's happening in the book with Aunt May. It's still a one-off story, and that's and even though they're happening more and more, it doesn't really work in today's modern 6 issues, 6 to 8 issues. Everything is really dark and brooding and serious.
At best, you get like a 5 or 8 pager in some, you know, backup. You get like or something a B story. Like
and,
yeah.
And honestly, these are the issues you're going to remember. These ones will stick with you. And these are the ones that are much more emotionally involving than say, you know, another gritted teeth fight, which are always fun. We enjoy. But this is the one that you'll think about.
It's like the Straczynski. I'm going to go ahead and give him. It was a pick of the week.
Yeah.
Batgirl's last night before she gets shot by the Joker kind of thing. Like, yeah. I don't remember anything else about any comics at that time other than that was real good. Cliff Chang draw that?
Yes.
Yeah. I remember that.
Great issue. Number 13.
But that's another example of exactly what you're talking about. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. I mean, it was the Brave and the Bold 13. I remember the title. I remember the number.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what I read last week necessarily. And so, right. You know, those are the issues that stick with you. Another book that I texted you to read was The Flash 70, Joshua Williams and Howard Porter. Were you planning on reading this?
I did. I had already read it. I saw that it was a year one on the cover, and I thought, all right, that seems bold or perhaps even redundant, but sure. If everything right now is broken, let's just go back to the beginning and see how they want to do this. So they're doing Barry Allen's origin, basically, from the start.
I was really worried. I don't know why.
I wasn't worried, but I thought this can't be a good idea. I definitely thought that.
Well, it's a grand DC tradition to, at some point, do the year. It was rooted in the idea that, you know, we've talked about before how it used to be that the readership would change over every so often. So you'd have to sort of retell the origin every few years because the readers would go, who the fuck is Barry Allen? So you'd tell them.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the year one sort of became a popular storyline, Batman year one.
Justice League.
They became sort of a popular branding DC thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's not unusual for them to do this kind of thing. I was a little surprised. I was mildly surprised.
It seemed like this doesn't seem like the time for that. Like, and also, I feel like I've read Flash's origin a lot. Like, more than most.
The difference is, I guess, in Rebirth, we kind of got it, but this is a modern Barry Allen. We haven't really had a modern Barry Allen origin story in the comics, because when he came back for Rebirth, it was the guy from the Silver Age who came back. So we already, you know, they didn't really retell his origin story. That was more about him readjusting to society. And then when the reboot happened, he was just already the Flash. So I guess my worry was that they were going to drastically change it. My worry was they were going to make it some sort of like Destiny story, which they tend to do when they redo these origins in the modern world. It's like, you've always been meant to be the Flash, not just it was an accident. And you were a good person, you decided to do something about it. That to me is much more powerful than you were destined to be the Flash. And so I was a little worried reading it that this is what would happen, but so far so good. It's the classic Barry Allen origin with modern tropes.
Yeah, and then also like the bit at the end I really liked, where basically he's like, he's feeling around with his powers, he's, you know, checking to see what they do, he's wearing out shoes, he's realizing it's the same thing as the first episode of the TV show.
Yeah.
More or less, you know, and then he's like, this is fun, I like this, but he overshoots it and he shoots forward in time, which I was like, that's rad. and then you know, of course, whenever you shoot forward in time in a comic book movie, it's Armageddon and everything's crumbled. every single time. No one ever shoots ahead to find a utopia, and if they do, they find it's not really a utopia. And then he meets himself. He meets old man Flash. This is a very Joshua Williamson story. I gotta say, you know, this is in a way like that dude was destined to write The Flash. Like, I've known him a long time, and as soon as he started on The Flash, and it was pretty, I was like, oh yeah, this is what he was meant to do. You know, and he's been working on this for years now, double shipping, so still got it. I do think the story here is it is some fantastic Howard Porter.
Really good. That was my pitch to you if you hadn't read it, was that it's really, really good Howard Porter. We talked about on our JLA Books Blowed how much his style has changed over the years and grown.
It has.
He's a much better artist, and we liked him a lot back then. But he's really found his voice.
Still his style. It doesn't look like anybody else, but it's tighter. The storytelling's better. He's not trying to be quite as showy, which I think is more a thing of the time than it is now.
I mean, the page where he was struck by lightning is this incredibly dynamic page where Barry's like half bent over and the lightning's shooting through him, but it's also the sound effect
but also just from a yeoman standpoint of view, one of the two, the first 6-8 pages have a massive amount of panels and storytelling and stuff to get through, talking heads, and he really crams a ton of it in. Also, credit to the letterer on this one, who's not listed as far as I can find it.
He's not skimping. There's no skimping in these pages.
He's making that work in a way that, like, those pages could easily be busy and terrible. And I think there's some really great. Like, he's like, well, we only got 20 pages. Watch this.
Mm-hmm.
Which is pretty great. And then he opens it up later when he's supposed to.
There is no letterer. That's weird.
I was like, what the hell?
Maybe it's, I don't know. I was going to say DC lettering, but because that's what they credit it sometimes, but who knows? Anyway, this was a great issue. These three books we just talked about were the three best books I read this week.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Yeah. Spider-Man, The Flash. Either any of them could have been Pick of the Week. I didn't really think about what I would do, but any one of these three could have been Pick of the Week.
Sure.
In my mind. On a different week.
I am enjoying this little Detective Comics story that's going on now.
Which is funny, because I think you were giving it a backhanded slap in the 1000 issue. Well, you gave the whole issue one backhanded slap.
Yes. But not because of the quality of the things inside it.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, I actually like Damian in this.
No, yeah. I'm enjoying this. And I posted a picture, one of the panels on our Instagram page. It seems odd to say, but you know, there's been two Batman and Robin titles in the last 10 years. But other than that, like, you don't get a lot of Batman and Robin stories.
You do. You get a lot of, like, Damian at the house grousing about something before he goes up.
Yeah, they go off on different adventures. Like, it's like ever since Tim Drake came along and it gave him his own solo book, it was almost rarity. And so I really like seeing Batman and Robin together.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're right.
It touches me in a way that, because, you know, as a kid, that's what you read. And you get Batman with the Justice League, you get Batman on his own, you get Robin with the Titans, you get Robin on his own. You don't get a lot of these stories. So I just really like seeing them together. Even if I don't like this Robin, I still like the idea of Batman and Robin. So I actually been really into this story, which I guess one of our listeners told us these characters, these knights are characters from the video game, which we don't play, so we didn't know about, but I guess that's what that is. And the big reveal here is that the leader of the group is Arkham's daughter.
Oh, right, yeah. The thing I really liked, and I liked all that stuff, Brad Walker, and it's not just him. Brad Walker, who had an inker on this one, Andrew Hennessy, and then Colors with Nathan Fairbairn. This is a good-looking book.
Yes,
and
I
think having a guy not do all three things and actually having an inker come in, I can see it. Mm-hmm. It looks better than a lot of other. It looks more finished. Nathan Fairbairn's a great colorist, so that's not a surprise. But if I just kind of look at, you know, how it was rendered, and there was a little more time to be able to put in, and it's not like it's hyper detailed in that way. It's just done with a lot of care. There's a lot more shadowing, and the lighting is very specific in this. And it, like, if you look at, like, there's pages where you can, like, sort of see their hair, and it's just nice. There's a bit where they're both getting dressed, and I was like, it's just good looking. It reminds me, the comics don't really look like this as often. Dr. Phosphorus, like, look at that drawing. Yeah. If one guy was doing that with penciling and inking and sometimes coloring their own work, they wouldn't be able to do this on this kind of schedule.
Right.
It's great.
This has been fun. It's the polar opposite of what's happening in Batman, and I'm not saying it from a judgment standpoint. It's just a different kind of Batman story.
But that's what it should be.
Right. Batman's very cerebral, and this is very action-oriented, and if you get two different kind of Batmans between the two books. And
I think I wouldn't want one or the other. So be able, I mean, that's what the books are supposed to do, is give you that contrast, you know, Superman action comics, that kind of thing.
So this is a very classic, fun Batman story so far. I think we're only 3 issues into this story. If you're reading Batman, you're missing sort of that classic take. You're not reading Detective. You should check it out.
Yeah, it's been fun. Sort of not surprisingly. You know what? I see the next one here is Batman and the Outsiders, and I remember, like, that was supposed to be a thing a long time ago, and then it wasn't, and I guess now it is.
What do you mean it was a thing?
Like, it was supposed to come out a while back.
Oh, I don't remember.
Like, it had been teased.
It was teased in a book.
Like a long time ago, though. And when I talked to Brian on the Talksplode, like, he, I don't remember if it was off the air or on, but he was like, I know it's going to come along, but it hadn't yet. Because I think that it had been teased, and then everybody.
It was teased when he did his arc. His arc was sort of a prelude, because it had all these characters in it. And then that was a while ago, so maybe that was what you're thinking about. Did you read it?
No, I didn't even know it was a thing until I put it up on the script.
I didn't like it. Unless it's a huge event book, we try not to talk about stuff we don't like on the show.
Mm-hmm. Fair game.
But people would have asked anyway. Batman the Outsiders number one, Brian Edward Hill, Dexter Soy, Veronica Gandini, Clayton Cowles. Two problems with the book. One, I just don't like Dexter Soy, his art. It's a style that doesn't appeal to me. It feels very old and not in a good way.
I know the name and I can kind of picture. I'm looking for the issue, but
it just feels kind of like old 90s style, like bad 90s style.
Was he a Milestone guy?
I don't remember.
Oh, I see what you mean. I really liked this at the time, but I don't like the little thin renderings on everything.
Yeah, and, like, just little things, like Bruce Wayne in a suit, his tie ends, like, only 3/4 of the way down a shirt. Like, just little weird, you know, things where just, like, there's not a lot of care taken in things like details. And it's just not a style that appeals to me anymore. And so I didn't like the look of it. There's some good, there's a couple of good pages. When Batman's swinging away at the very end is a good panel, but.
Yeah. And when she jumps off that bridge at the beginning, that's good looking.
Yeah, but for the most part, it's just not a style that appeals to me anymore. And then the other thing is, like, you've talked about this a lot. Everyone in this book seems to hate each other.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, I don't want to read that.
Yeah. You
know, if you're forming
the anti-West Wing.
If you're forming a team, like, maybe they should all like each other. And there can still be problems. But, you know, Black Lightning seems to actively hate Batman, and everyone else doesn't trust each other. And it's just like, and I get you kind of have to build the trust in the team together, but it's like, there's so much antagonism in this book between the main characters. It's just like, this isn't fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to have fun here.
Yeah.
So the combination of the art, which I didn't really like, and then the antagonism, I just don't know what to do here. Plus, he writes a very... If you're talking about the Batman spectrum, uh-huh. You know, he's like a very robotic, you know, staccato talking Batman.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you know, like, all right, I get it. But also, you know, give him a little bit of humanity, a little bit of warmth.
I think that the thing about this is you get that sliding scale of what type of comics is, and I don't even think that, like, looking at it and you're like, you're not saying it's bad, it's just
they went
this way with it, and yeah, it just wasn't the thing you wanted.
No, it's not a bad book, it's just the style doesn't appeal to me, and I was just the direction they chose doesn't appeal to me, and so I may try one more issue simply because I really like Brian Edward Hill's other work. I like all these characters.
I feel like the coloring is not doing the art much good.
It's very dark.
It's not only dark, but it's got like that, it's kind of smeary in places. It looks like, it almost reminds me of like Jay Lee in bits, but it doesn't really work terribly well. And then other places it's kind of sketchy. Like it's stylistically in, if you watch it in the beginning, there's a lot of rendering, and then by the end it's kind of smoothed out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm hyper focusing on it.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I was excited for it.
All right.
I might get one more issue simply for the strength of the writer, but it didn't fill me full of hope.
Is there any point to Duke yet?
No, there's still no point to Duke.
There's still no point to Duke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Superfluous.
Roll with orphan stories all day long, or you could just go back to calling her Batgirl when she was amazing.
She also talks too much now, and this is not his fault. This is a character thing they brought in with James Tynion, but now she talks in like Hulk sentences.
Do people know about that Batgirl run? Damian Scott and that Batgirl. That was amazing. That was so good.
The 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s.
I think early 2000s. I want to say that up to the mid. 2001, 2, 3, 4, somewhere in there.
When Cassie Kane was Batgirl.
Yep.
You know, prior to Stephanie Brown, after Barbara Gordon. It was a great, she was a great character, and it was a great series.
It was beautiful art. It was wonderful. This is the same kind of cartoony art we've been talking about a lot, actually.
Yeah. Let's take a break and talk about Molecule. Molecule is reimagining the future of clean air, starting with the air purifier. It's not just an improvement on existing outdated technology, but a complete reinvention of air purification. Molecule was developed by a scientist whose son suffered from asthma and who was frustrated by the fact that HEPA air purifiers did not relieve his son's symptoms. As a result, Dr. Yogi Goswami spent 20 years developing a completely new, totally effective way of removing indoor air pollutants. Why Molecule? Global air pollution is worsening at an ever-increasing rate. Over 80% of people living in urban areas that monitor air pollution are exposed to air quality below World Health Organization standards. Worst news is that the indoor air can be up to 5 times worse than the outdoor air, according to EPA. Most of us spend around 90% of our time indoors. We're all indoor kids now.
Get out more.
The HEPA filter was invented during
World War II. But watch the ticks. Sorry.
Right. This won't help you with ticks. The HEPA filter was invented during World War II, way back in the 1940s. It has not been updated in 70 years. It's not great. We can do better. Unlike HEPA filters, Molecule destroys indoor air pollutants at a molecular level, completely removing them from the air you breathe. Molecule is your best defense against allergy season. It's the springtime. So you know what that means.
Are you doing okay?
No, we're going to get to that in a second. Molecule has reinvented the air purifier to destroy airborne pollutants, including viruses, bacteria, gaseous chemicals, and mold, using breakthrough photoelectrochemical oxidation, PECO. Molecule doesn't just collect air pollutants, it destroys them at a molecular level. When you turn on a molecule, you're creating the purest air possible, combating allergy season by destroying the allergens in your home. Sounds Molecule good, is like the Thanos for stuff that messes up your breathing. You turn it on, it's like a snap of the finger, and it takes away the bad air. And as Josh alluded to, I'm someone who suffers some really bad allergies. I've been getting shots for years. It helps, but I know when springtime comes around, because that's when I stop breathing at night and sleep for 3 hours and get generally miserable and unpleasant to be around because I'm tired and I can't sleep. And why? It's because the air sucks in my apartment.
My son is suffering from that right now. And all of a sudden, he's just like, I just feel bad. And I was like, yeah.
Get rescued to that happen. For the rest of your life every time it comes to April. Yeah.
Well, let's try this medication. That made me feel worse. Okay. Maybe we should get cleaner air.
This one makes me tired. So yeah. If this sounds familiar to you, as it happens with many people, check out Molecule. Molecule's technology has been personally effective and verified by science. But most importantly, it's been tested by real people. Molecule's given allergy and asthma sufferers around the country an all-new experience. Here's what you do. For $75 off your first order of a Molecule unit, visit MOLEKULE.com and at checkout, enter code iFanboy to get $75 off your Molecule order. I mean, if there's a device that'll help me sleep better, I'm going for it. If I can Thanos snap away the allergens.
They're destroying molecules. Doesn't that create fusion energy? I don't know how it works.
Can I plug devices into the molecule then? Is it like turning the allergens into fusion?
Yeah.
I'm not a scientist.
That's next. That's version two.
I'm not a scientist. Where's Ryan? So thank you, Molecule, and you should check it out. MOLEKULE.com. You don't read Deadly Class anymore, do you?
I do. I've not ever stopped reading it.
Okay, neither have I. I watched the TV show and really, really liked it. I thought it was really impressive, and Rick wrote a bunch of it. He was the showrunner.
Yeah.
And I think I like the book now more after mm-hmm. having watched the show. I think I have a better context for the character, because it was really close to the book.
I'm sure.
I think I have a better feeling for the characters, a better context. And this issue in particular, I thought was also really good. This was like my number four issue of the week. Mm-hmm. Where Marcus comes back to school after all that time's been away. He's been away for so long since the graduation ceremony, in which all the freshmen get attacked by the upperclassmen and they had to escape and they had to live on the run. And that was a long time ago. And so finally he's back at school. And so I think the strength of the book lives in that environment. And so I thought that's why one of the reasons why this issue was one of the stronger ones I've read in a while, because we're back in that school environment. And that's really where Rick's unique viewpoint on the world of education and cliques and things really shines.
It was interesting to, like, with the sort of advent of the TV show and it being relatively successful, as far as I understand, then he reset the book, basically.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way, I was like, oh, they came back. And the effect of that was interesting. And it, like, all the characters are still there. All the stuff that happened still happened. We're still moving forward with it.
Yes and no. I mean, if you watch the show and you were in and you're one of those magical creatures that goes to the comic store and picks out this issue, everyone in the show is dead except for two characters. All the main characters are
I only meant in terms of, because I haven't watched the show, but only in terms of the book. You know, they're getting us back to, like, they're resetting the pieces. They're getting us back to where we started, except not.
Yeah.
But at least we're on common ground and we can sort of go from here.
But I really loved Wes Craig in this issue. I really loved the way they portrayed the flashbacks and the memories in the school as these sort of ghostly white chalk drawings almost in the background and then like in the hallways. It was a different way of doing a flashback. It was like, oh, because, you know, things are haunted in your life, your memory. You walk to a certain place and you have a flash to a memory, and that's how you portray that in a comic. Well, you could just show the scene or you could have it sort of overlaid, and that was a cool way to do it. I really liked this issue a lot. This is a really good issue.
I think I've made this equivocation with Captain America before. It's Captain America number 10. I think this book is a lot stronger with a Kubert on it than it was with Lanil Yu was on it originally, and I'm not a huge fan. And it also didn't seem to fit the tone for me all that much. But I like this storyline. I like this Steve Rogers in prison thing. Again, I know that we're dealing with the
Hydra
still. Yeah, we're still dealing with the Hydra Cap secret identity thing for a long time, and I would be fine to be with. But if we're going to deal with it, I think this is kind of interesting. And I you know, there is a thing where I just want to see Ta-Nehisi Coates' thinking. Mm-hmm. I really find it interesting, you know, having been familiar with sort of his nonfiction writing and the sort of the worldview from things that I've read and you know, interviews that I've seen with him. It's watching him fit that into a context of having, you know, Steve Rogers, Captain America, you know, as your main character of the book, I think it's intriguing enough that it's definitely worth to keep reading. And also, he's got a pretty good dose of that comic book drama, like a 70s kind of.
Oh, there's definitely that old, this is a throwback Cap book. Feels like a Roger Stern, you know.
Steve Englehart
kind of era. I'm going to disagree with you, though. I don't like the art in this book.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I'm only comparing it to the Lanil Yu stuff.
I like Lanil Yu in general, but I don't like Adam Kubert's not my favorite Kubert.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like this style. And it just doesn't respond. I don't respond to it. It's not bad. I just don't like it.
That makes sense.
It's not doing me any favors reading the book. I really like the story, but
I don't think the coloring fits the art. I've said that a couple times. Frank Martin's the same guy who colored, you know, all the Steve Epting stuff with Brubaker. And this style of art is so different that it doesn't seem to be. I don't think it requires the same kind of thing. He's not doing exactly the same kind of thing. I like the prison. I like Steve Rogers trapped in prison like for a long time and sort of what that means.
Coates is either an old school Cap fan or he's done a really good job of deep diving into the old books to really pull out, you know, Cap stuff from the past. He brought Bernie back, didn't he? Yeah, he brought Bernie back. Yeah. Like this is like old school Cap stuff.
I think he did his time with 70s and 80s Marvel is what I think. Hmm. That's my guess. I mean, he's got to be just about our age or something like that. So, you know, boxes of old Marvel comics found their way to us back then, just like it would with him. And if that was stuff that spoke to him, then it's here.
Sure.
Wonder Twins, number 4. This book got my biggest laugh of the week.
Okay.
There's what's her name? Zaina goes on a date and she meets a guy and he's kind of a backwards hat dipshit. And you're like, well, that's weird. Okay, go on. And then they reveal that he's in the League of Annoyance or he's at a mixer for them anyway. And his supervillain name is Red Flag.
Well, the Red Flag should have been the Soul Patch.
It was great. It was like,
the reveal was great. Well, first they were having a mixer, a Legion of Doom mixer in which they, the heavy hitters, but also the Legion of Annoyance, and plus their junior members, of which Red Flag is a junior member of the league. So he's like an up-and-coming supervillain. But just the idea that they're all sort of sitting around or standing around with hors d'oeuvres and champagne at this mixer was funny. But then the Red Flag reveal was really funny. And then, they're both on dates. Zan is on a date with a girl he
met. Oh, yeah, that was me too.
But clearly he does not want to be with him. And then Jaina is on her date with Red Flag at the same time, and the parallel structure of the pages was funny, and it's just bad for both of them.
I don't feel bad for him though, because he was cool with it. There wasn't like
he wasn't sad about it, but clearly he just wasn't aware that she was not. She was definitely trying to find a way to make her ex boyfriend jealous, and that's what happened. And he was so oblivious to it.
I don't know that I think at first he was oblivious, then after a bit, like he was totally fine with it.
He was fine after, but at the movie theater when they're making out next to him and he doesn't realize he's so engrossed in the movie, like that was like the part where I felt bad for him.
See, maybe that's where I thought, like, I was like, oh, he knows he's fine with it. He's that confident. He's okay. He's happy. He's got a monkey. Doesn't matter. It was funny. The bits, every single thing that Red Flag said after they named him Red Flag was funny. I like the art quite a bit. Stephen Byrne, it works exactly for this. The last panel of her turning into a cheetah and running away, that is not a good-looking cheetah.
Hmm.
Maybe she's mid-transformation. I don't know.
Yeah, it looks like a human cheetah. The arms are too long. Maybe that's just mid-trans. Who knows?
Who knows?
But you're right. Red Flag was great.
Yep. It's an easy joke, and it's almost cliched, but he completely nailed it. So
he berated the waitress for 5 minutes about their mozzarella sticks.
And thought he was the hero.
Invaders number 5, I just wanted to mention because it, you know, shit got crazy. And we've been talking about this book probably every issue. But when Namor cut the head off the Human Torch, and then I guess fire doesn't matter because he was holding it as it was flaming, but sort of holding it like a talisman.
Uh-huh.
I was like, damn, that's fucked up. You guys are friends. Like, you're war buddies.
Like, yeah, he's a robot.
But still, it's like, I mean, it was also the human tornado. Why do I call him the Red Skull? The Human Torch's head is talking. Like, it was all fucked up.
Yes.
But talking in the broken robot way because his head's been severed from the body. Like, it was all, I was like, damn, Namor. And then, of course, the plan is unfolded with the attack. And this was another really good issue.
I liked the bit with Cap, and he goes and talks to she's an admiral, I guess. And he's like, I know you don't believe you, so you got to do this. And he gets through to her through all that sort of military red tape kind of stuff. So I like that too.
And then she got killed immediately.
Yeah. Well, she's doing her duty.
This is a great book.
Yep. It's a good time. Book. Oh, gee. What are we doing now? We're talking about this. Oh, you're not gonna be happy about this.
So those are the books we wanted to talk about. But if you're at patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote as all the patrons, not all the patrons do vote, but many patrons vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron can vote. And this week, they decided to put us in the Star Wars corner by voting for Star Wars Age of Rebellion Boba Fett, number 1. Greg Pak, Mark Laming, Nirai Menon, and Travis Lanham is the creative team. Boba Fett.
Boba Fett?
I literally just saw that scene on May 4th. They were showing all the movies on TV, and I turned on randomly Return of the Jedi, and it was that scene. Mm-hmm. Like, I turned it on, Han goes, Boba Fett. And then he died. So obviously I have not been reading any of the Star Wars books. I'm not into reading the Star Wars books.
Well, this is a standalone Tales, so...
Yeah, and so, I mean, there was a lot of glee in the patrons to get me to read a Star Wars book, and that's fine. I am your little dancing monkey. But if you're going to make me read a Star Wars book, this would be the book to do it, because, as you said, this is sort of a off-to-the-side tale of Boba Fett. It's a one-shot. It doesn't have anything to do with the movies. There's no continuity problems, which is one of the reasons why I stopped reading the books in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Pak's a great writer. I like Mark Laming's art. He does a really great Boba Fett. I like this. I enjoyed reading it.
Yeah, it was fun. I found myself throughout the whole time thinking, because Boba Fett doesn't say anything, basically.
Mm-hmm. Until the very end.
But yeah, no, but basically at the very end he says something. But for the most part, and I thought, well, that's he doesn't not talk, because at least in the original trilogy, he doesn't really talk other than a couple of sentences. But he talked a lot in the prequel trilogy. So I just thought that was, I know. I thought that was an interesting choice. I liked they made him unstoppable force of nature, you know, which is what the Boba Fett thing should be. You know, everybody's afraid of him and everybody knows him. He's only about the bounty. That's what he does. I liked the villain, you know, he's doing basically the villain bounty hunter who's doing the heel thing. You know, he's like, yeah. let's be friends. No, it's okay. All right, I'll get him. Wait, no. You know, like he's cowardly and he's evil and treacherous. And so he's got it coming.
Boba's all about the Benjamins.
Yeah.
He's not going to help your village unless the guy terrorizing your village is one of his bounties. And then he will help your village.
Side effect.
He's kind of like a worse Jonah Hex here.
Yeah.
Jonah Hex ultimately has a good heart and they will always convince him to help the village, but at first he'll put up the fight. He'll say, I don't care about your village. I'm here for that guy, and then eventually he'll do it. But Boba Fett is not like that, but that's basically this is basically a Jonah Hex story with Boba Fett,
mm-hmm.
which I liked. And
wait
it worked.
A minute. Is the guy at the end a bounty? Oh, yes. I see. Yes. I understand now.
Yeah, the guy who wants him to come help their village, he's wanted, and so that's the reveal
of him. Just now when I was looking at it, that was the one part of the book that didn't work for me. I was like, why is he getting angry at pointing his gun at that guy? But I just saw the panels of why. And that was actually pretty subtle and good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in the background, so you don't even know if you see that.
Yep.
It's really well drawn. It's a well-written book. I like Silent Boba Fett because and part of why he was so cool in the beginning was that we didn't know a lot about him
point.
And he didn't talk very much. And
everything he does is only out of the necessity of having to do that thing to accomplish his goal.
Right.
Also, I liked his, like, robot horse camel thing.
Right. For me, my point of view, if you're going to do Star Wars stories, do them on the edges. Do them on the fringes.
Also, like, they didn't, again, I said this before, they didn't skimp on the art at all in this
one. No.
You know, like, the drawing and the coloring on Boba Fett and the, you know, the bars and the little towns they're in is all, like, it's all there.
This is what you want Star Wars to look like. Mark Laming's really good.
Yep. Yeah.
He's a name. He's been around forever, too.
He's like when you can't get Gabe Hardman, you get him.
Yeah.
Like literally on the Gabe Hardman books, I think it was the Apes book or maybe it was the Star Wars, one or the other, or maybe both. You know, Gabe wrote with Karina, but he drew the first arc. And then after that, they brought in Mark Laming to do the rest of it. And it's a pretty seamless transition.
Yeah, it's good. There's some really good pages here where Boba kicks the door in right at us, which is, you know, an angle you don't often see. And you know, there's some nice action here.
It's got I think Laming's British, but it has sort of a 2000 AD sort of storytelling vibe that I like, or at least British comics kind of thing.
And he looks dirty. He looks beat up.
Yep. Yeah. Coloring is nice too. It was good. It was fun.
Star Wars Age of Rebellion, Boba Fett, number one. Ratings. Ratings out of five.
3.75?
Yes.
Yeah, didn't break any ground or anything.
No,
it was
really
satisfying.
Fun. I enjoyed it.
Good slice of pizza.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
Are you reading these books, these Age of Rebellion books?
I'm reading the ones that I'm interested in.
So you're,
I think
in a,
I read
in a way
this
you're
one.
Sticking with it.
In a way, yeah. I mean, if I'm interested in if the next one's about, you know, Dexter Jax, you know what I mean? some character I don't give a shit about.
Dax.
Dexter Jetster, I think is the name.
What about Lando? That seems to be the next one.
Maybe, probably, depends. Is it which Lando?
It looks like Empire Lando. He's got the Empire suit clothes on.
Yeah, probably. You truly belong on here with us among the clouds.
But I feel like these books should be like Porkins. You know,
I'd read that.
I guess this takes place after. All these books take place after A New Hope, so Porkins would.
Yeah.
It should be a book about Porkins and just be a book of blackness.
Yeah.
Just black pages. The infinite void.
So you might be asking, how can I select what books these gentlemen read?
How can you force them to read something they don't want to read?
I'm just saying, you don't have to do that. You can pick whatever you want, but like, what do you want out of it? Do you want us to writhe? Do you want to get a thoughtful review on something? There's two different goals there. I would think you make it worth your time, but if it's a discomfort is your thing, then fine. You're a sadist. If you want to be a sadist, sorry, that was just riffing, and I don't think that went where I wanted, but it's honest.
You went down a dark path.
Go to patreon.com/ifanboy. You can sign up at any level, and you can obviously become a voter. You can enfranchise yourself in this section of the show specifically. We've reached many stretch goals. We have some others. We've sort of been where we are now, and maybe this is just where we'll be. I don't know. But if you've been on the fence and you're thinking, boy, I don't know if I want to, you know, if you like the show and you can contribute, then that would be, I think it's the right thing to do.
That's aces.
It is aces. You do not have to go screw if you do that. And you should do that for, you know, the things you like and that are important to you. Like I look at something, should I support this thing? And I say, yeah, you know what? I should. It's the right thing to do. And that's the way to go. So thank you for everybody who does that. We are still in awe and very much appreciate that. You helping us do the show and make it worth our while. And then some. And then there are other ways that you can pitch in as well. You can go to the t-shirt store over at ifanboy.threadless.com. Not just t-shirts. They're consumer goods. Yeah. They're sundries. Is sundries the right word? I don't even know what that means.
Sure. iFanboy sundries.
iFanboy sundries.
I don't know.
So we've got 7 current designs. You know, we're going to keep telling you that we're going to put more designs in there right up until the point that we put more designs in there. And then after that, we will say, more designs are coming.
I realize I am falling down on this. I owe you something and I haven't done it yet. My fault. What I'm saying is this is my fault. You haven't seen it. Yeah. I'm falling behind.
Well, to be fair, I'm not doing anything. So in a way, it's my fault too. Maybe even more so. You know, I should be there. You know, if you're falling down on the beach in the Omaha Beach, I should be there to pick you up. But I'm like, I'm over here. Good.
I got my own thing going on.
The German 88s can't hit me from here. But I was wrong about that mostly because those German 88s were pretty destructive. I'm off topic. You can go to ifanboy.com/support.
Well, it's the second half of the show, so.
You don't want to deal with any of that stuff. You can donate via PayPal if that's a thing that you would like to do. One-time donation, recurring, whatever. Choose your pleasure. And then finally, a very easy way to also help out is to go to ifanboy.com/Amazon. You'll find links to buy things on Amazon from like the books on our Booksplode or the issues that we choose to pick of the week, or just a general link. So that is all for that. But not only that, if you donate to Patreon at a rate of $5 a month or higher, you find yourself placed firmly and sometimes for a while on our list of people who are set to get Patreon powers, which we are going through 4 at a time.
We're trying. Every week. We're getting close.
We are. I don't want
closer.
To run out.
Closer. We're still ways to go, but we're much closer than
I know.
Ever.
It's going to be a sad day when we run out, though. Maybe that'll spur people to jump off. I like many of the names this week, the ones that are legible. Robert Dean Kidd.
He sounds like a gunfighter.
Yeah, he does. He is adept. He doesn't even want to do it, but what happens is that he finds and then is able to solve unsolved mysteries. He'll notice, wait a minute. Going on. Is there an answer?
Yeah, like famous ones or just general, like, where's my socks?
Depends on where he is.
So it's contextual. Contextual.
It is contextual. It's uncanny how he reveals them, but then also he quickly dispatches with them. He has a keen, almost supernatural intellect to solve those mysteries so that he can move on with things. But also he keeps finding them.
So they have to be mysteries that affect him then.
They come into his attention one way or the other.
I see.
They don't have to affect him, but he's there. The thing, he can't help it.
Interesting. Okay. Wes Ailes. That's how I'm going to say it.
Ailes.
He has soap fingers.
Aw.
What that means is, from the tips of his fingers, he can emit soap.
Mm-hmm.
One of his fingers does dish soap.
Mm-hmm.
One of his fingers does body wash.
Okay.
One of his fingers does face wash.
All right.
One of his fingers does that evaporating car wash soap. That special soap that I have that I can't think of the name of it, but you can wash your car with. One of his fingers, what's left?
What about bar soap? So that he can write graduation messages on the backs of cars.
One of them is dry bar soap.
Uh-huh. So it's not all he can cap them off then.
Yeah, it's like not he shoots them out. No, it's not always shooting. He just, you know, like instead of shooting out purple energy like he's an X-Men from the 90s, he shoots out soap.
It feels like there's maybe a possibility for helpful for himself, maybe a spouse or whoever his current paramour is, and maybe kids.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, a career in nursing, perhaps.
Or also he can, you know, like he could do like a he can make the floor real soapy.
Okay.
And then you couldn't chase him. You know, there's practical applications. If he was in an 80s college movie, he'd make the whole dorm hallway soapy.
What about water? The water has to come from an external source.
Yeah, but he could make you a kick-ass bubble bath with his body wash.
What about the fragrance and flavor of the soap? Is that one thing? Is he always like, oh, this one's manly burlap smell, or this one's like lotus flower?
Yes, lavender.
Uh-huh.
You know what? He can control this flavor depending on what he eats.
So it's indirect.
This is steak soap.
I'm concerned about your diet. I'm smelling an awful lot of bacon in your soap lately.
Right. I mean, it's still soap, but it'll still clean you. It's just the scent. Yeah. The scent of the soap.
Ocean Breeze soap.
Yeah.
And Wes Ollis for people who don't want to stink.
Tongue oil.
Ooh. I'm going to say these letters in the order they are.
I just went to the spreadsheet to make sure you hadn't had a stroke while typing the script. And you didn't.
So we've got J. Dom.
Mm-hmm.
Tipkvin.
Tipkin.
Tipkvin. J. Dom Tipkvin.
He's not wrong. That's how it's spelled.
Can blink YouTubers out of existence.
Blink? So he's a murderer.
Nope. He just disappears them from existence. Nobody remembers them.
Well, that's called murder.
No.
That's what Thanos did.
Well, he's the Thanos of YouTubers.
Jesus, Josh.
Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever heard one of the Minecraft YouTuber videos?
No.
Where people play Minecraft and incessantly?
I know it exists. I've just never watched one.
Well.
He can murder them.
Nah. He disappears them. No one ever knew they were there, so there's no. They've just taken them out of existence. It's putting us on a different time stream. It doesn't.
Why not?
It doesn't. There's no body. They never happened.
This is a very fine line of murder.
I don't think you've really spent enough time with these videos to make this seem appealing, but I guarantee you that there are many parents out there listening to this who know exactly what I'm talking about, and they're like, "Nah, it's valid. It's justifiable. The videos are very annoying."
You know, we had a show that was available on YouTube for a while.
We're not that.
Okay.
You would just click away from ours, or if you didn't like it, you wouldn't think, "I wish this person didn't exist." But I've thought that.
Okay. All right. Okay.
You know what I've been watching lately?
This just got dark. Yeah.
Chiropractor videos.
You need to get outside.
Now they recommend them to me. So I'm like, well, I'll just watch one more. Crack.
You know, earlier you said people should get outside.
I know I should get outside more. It's not my choice.
I'm just saying, there's better ways to spend your time. Oscar Escobar Nugare.
he was Latin for a bit, and then he became Japanese at the end there.
You know how they say, watch pot never boils?
Uh-huh.
Oscar can look at your pot, it'll start boiling.
That is helpful.
Instantly boils water.
I have one child who only eats pasta. That would be a lifesaver for me.
Did you adopt Ron?
Instantly? No, literally only pasta.
Like mac and cheese? He's getting a
little. Yeah, that counts as pasta.
Mm.
Although he considers it a separate thing. I'm like, you can't have pasta again. I'm going to have mac and cheese. That's pasta.
So, Ron.
Is it instant or just like have a little bit of a run up or is it just boom, it's boiling?
It just starts boiling.
Oh, that's awesome.
Boom. Boil.
Boy, boom. If you like tea.
Yeah. Or anything. Anything that requires boiling water.
Yeah. I mean, everything does. He can sterilize things.
Robert, Wes, Oscar, and who, Josh?
J-Dom.
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 thanks for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. If you want to get your own superpower, $5 or higher, we think everyone does so. And if you're still on the list, you're waiting patiently. We're getting to you. We're not that far off.
It's not like we took a week off.
I think by the end of the year, we might be caught up.
Oh, wow. That'll be very sad. You know, I really thought you were going to laugh at the YouTuber thing, and instead you just made me feel bad. Except I don't.
I laugh on the inside.
I thought I had you, but I think that you just... I don't think you've spent enough time on YouTube to understand that this is a problem.
Well, that is also true. That's also possible.
Which is a positive.
We are actually... It looks like maybe... Yeah, it'll be the last quarter. We'll be caught up with these names. Huh. As of now. Notice more people join up.
There you go.
I think we went too long for your emails.
Probably. You know what? Do the second one because it's not really a question. We can talk about it really quick, and I think it was a good point to make that we have not talked about lately.
Andrew.
Go ahead.
Andrew from Parts Unknown says, I feel like it's been a while since you gave a shout-out to libraries as a good source of comics. In the past year and a half, I've gotten married, bought a house, neither of which are cheap. But thanks to my local library, the Pikes Peak Library District. I also plowed through all of Scalped, Ex Machina, and Tom King's Batman, among others. I'm currently working my way through Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, and I have the first few volumes of Hellblazer on reserve. Lots of libraries have access to a digital archive called Hoopla, which is where I read most of the above.
I think that's a wonderful point. I will say on this past weekend is Free Comic Book Day, mm-hmm. and it occurred to me, for the first time since being a father, that my children might actually enjoy doing that. So I went to one comic shop, which was a friend of mine runs it, and there was a line basically down the street. And I said, that's not going to work for me. So I went to another place, and we went and we got free comics for the kids. And they really enjoyed it. And my younger son said to me, he said, I wish every day was Free Comic Book Day. And I was like, well, work on a podcast for a while. And but he really liked it, and my older son, we go to the library a lot to get him stuff like that. He's not really into getting comics too often, but it is a really good point to make. Comics are not getting cheaper. You know, if you're buying digital comics, it can run up really fast, as much as paper comics. And the library is a really good option. And the more that you patronize those, the more they're going to have. It's a nice system right there. So support those, and you know, the people who work in libraries are good people.
Yes,
and they're working hard. They're doing a lot with a little, and take advantage of it because it's a great thing. That's all. See,
Pike's Peak was a pimple. Some good fellows.
Okay,
that's what
I don't remember that at all.
Tommy says that.
Hey,
back when Pike's Peak was a pimple. contact@ifanboy.com if you want to get your email on the show. Also, if you want to send us a sound clip, we'll play that like a voicemail. If you want to send us that to contact@ifanboy.com. That's how you get in the show. Quick plugs. Previous special edition shows include Shazam, Hellboy, Justice League vs. the Fatal Five, Avengers Endgame, and the Talks Blow Josh did with colorist Jordan Boyd, who was on a book this week. What was it?
This week's was, I saw it, I noticed it, now I can, Deadly Class.
Deadly Class. Good job.
Yeah, which you know, we were talking about that, the fact that, you know, like, Rick Remender is no slouch. He's not going to hire somebody on a book who's not good, so no. That's saying something.
So those shows are all available behind these in various depths. They're all good shows. And if you're a patron, you missed our last hangout. That's where you can find.
No, the Hellboy show is not a good show. I don't want to lie.
To be fair, I haven't listened to that one.
You don't.
I haven't seen the movie. But if you are a patron and you didn't come to our last hangout, you would have missed Josh and I and Ron doing 45 minutes on Avengers. So if you want to hear that, go to the patron page. There's a link to the old hangout. The video's there. All the old hangouts are there. So check that out. People have asked. That's where you can find it. And what's coming up, Josh, later this month, which is rapidly dwindling?
Booksplode. Nah, we're one-third of the way. We're good.
Okay.
Booksplode coming up this month is going to be Daredevil Born Again later in the month. Not a very big volume. I'm going to get on that.
I'm excited. When it came during last week's show, I got home. I looked through it. I was like, man, I'm excited to read this.
Yeah. It's like there's a classic that we haven't. You know, have you read it? Did we talk about this?
I read it a long time ago.
Forever.
I don't remember anything about it. I remember
it's
nothing.
It's basically
about
like
it.
New. Yeah, that's fine.
It's like watching Deadwood again.
Okay.
Head over to fanboy.com, find all of our podcasts, the ones we just talked about, our old ones, our old contents there. Listen, if you're looking to kill time at work, there's tons of old articles. You can read the hilariously old opinions and thoughts we had on things that came to pass or not came to pass back then. Find them all there at fanboy.com. In addition to that, you can go to follow us on facebook.com/ifanboy or follow us at ifanboy on Twitter to know what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can also follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram. You'll find out the pick there. You'll see the Best of the Week in Panels feature that we do after we read our comics. It's a fun fun time. Individually, we are at J. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
There is a way to very easily influence and be helpful to a podcast you like, including ours or any others. You want to write a review, leave a star rating on iTunes, tell people what you think, or, you know, just tell people directly about it. Be the word of mouth that we need you to be.
Be the change you need to be in this world.
Yeah. See the change that you want to be. Mm-hmm. Don't blink us out of existence.
Oh, Jesus.
Which wouldn't be murder. Just clear.
If people want to chime in on this debate, they can. I'm just saying it wasn't me.
On a theoretical level, because luckily, as far as I know, we're unable to blink people out of existence. Mm-hmm. But if we were able to, we wouldn't know about it anyway, so there's no hard feelings.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Thanos did wrong. Mm-hmm. And he could have done it the other way. He could have just made the people disappear, but also said, and no one remembers them. But he had to be a snot about it. He had to have people know that he did it. Mm-hmm. And that's where it fell apart for him.
Yeah. Sure.
Think about that.
Mm-hmm. I'm not wearing a wire. Just in
case
you're
wondering. Should note that the last thing the last thing on the script is help spread the iFanboy love, which is now more ironic than it was 5 minutes ago.
We should update that copy. All right. This is fun.
It always is.
Yeah.
It's always fun.
Sure. No, it's always fun. I enjoyed this one. Let's close it out. Until next week, I'm Connor.
Josh, thank you.
Bye. Don't lose your head.
Dead, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.